Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Katie Weaver, Jill Robbins, and Dan Friedel. Later, Alice Bryant and Phil Dierking will have this week's education report. But first, China is enforcing new limits on fishing in the South China Sea, despite protests from countries with fishing operations in the disputed waterway. The Chinese government said it began a new fishing moratorium last month to protect fishing stocks. The moratorium lasts for 3 months, 30 days longer than in previous years. It also covers more fishing operations than previous moratoriums. Taiwan, Vietnam, and the Philippines all claim control over waters within the area covered by the moratorium. Some fishing boat operators in those countries are defying the moratorium. The Vietnamese government criticized the moratorium, questioning its legality. The Philippines government has been working with China to resolve trade disputes and has not commented on the new fishing moratorium. Taiwan's government gives awards to fishing boat operators who set their own fishing limits. The government said it would assist fishing operators affected by the new Chinese fishing rules. Taiwanese boats are known to follow bluefish tuna in the South China Sea. Cho Chui Chung is an official with the Taiwan government's Mainland Affairs Council. He said Taiwan officials are ready to order rescue missions to protect the safety of fishing crews and their vessels. So we ask that our Taiwanese friends in the fishing industry relax, he said. China has enforced previous South China Sea fishing moratoriums by arresting fishing boat operators. But analysts said many fishing operators know the best areas to fish to avoid drawing attention of Chinese officials. Murray Hibert is an area expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He said China is likely to use different enforcement methods against violators of its fishing moratorium. They include taking control of fishing boats, arresting boat operators, or sinking boats whose operators do not follow orders from Chinese authorities. Hibert said, some Vietnamese fishing boats will continue going out to fish and risk harassment or arrests. Others are likely to hang back to avoid trouble. Earlier this month, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis praised China for working to limit North Korea's nuclear weapons program. But he said the United States would not accept a Chinese military buildup on islands in the South China Sea. Mattis made the comments while attending a recent meeting in Singapore. Chinese Foreign Minister official Hua Chunying responded to Mattis by saying China will continue to safeguard its claims to the South China Sea. But Hua said China remains ready to peacefully resolve disputes to uphold the peace and stability of the South China Sea.
Panama says it will switch diplomatic ties from Taiwan to China. The decision effectively expands China's influence in Central America. Panamanian President Juan Carlos Varela made the announcement on Monday. He said China is the second most important user of the Panama Canal, the country's important waterway linking the Atlantic and Pacific oceans. Varela said of the decision, "I'm convinced that this is the correct path for our country." Taiwan reacted to Panama's action by cutting formal ties with Panama and ending all aid. In a statement, it called the change an extremely unfriendly act. Taiwan's president, Tsai Ing-wen, had visited Panama last year to strengthen ties. She attended a ceremony for the expansion of the Panama Canal. Tsai also offered Panama a donation of 3,000 boxes of flu medicine to fight an outbreak in Panama, according to the Central News Agency based in Taipei. Panama's decision comes after several years of private talks between Chinese and Panamanian leaders. The Latin American news website El Universo says China is the second biggest investor in the Panama Canal after the United States. It says China sends 19% of the goods that pass through the canal yearly. A China-supported project to build another canal connecting the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans through Nicaragua has not started. Taiwan left the United Nations in 1971 when China was admitted. The United States and Japan, however, continue to have strong informal relations with Taiwan. Currently, about 19 countries and the Vatican have formal diplomatic relations with Taiwan. Many are small countries in Africa, Central America, and islands in the Caribbean Sea and the South Pacific Ocean. Under former Taiwanese President Ma Ying-jeou, no allies switched sides. However, other Latin American and Caribbean countries have been considering formalizing relations with China. China considers Taiwan a rebel province and has threatened to use force if the island declares independence. It is expected to carefully seek to establish relations with more of Taiwan's allies. Alex Jiang is a professor of international relations at National Zhengzhi University in Taipei. "I think China will be selective because they don't want to embarrass Taiwan. So I think they will only try to go slowly and also give time to Taiwan to react," said Jiang. Political scientists say Taiwan can have fewer than 10 allies if necessary. The island looks to those allies to speak up in the United Nations. I'm Mario Ritter.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says North Korea has released an American college student from prison. Otto Warmbier had been sentenced to a 15-year term on charges of attempted theft. The North Korean government said Warmbier had tried to steal a propaganda sign in January 2016. He was sentenced in March of that year. Tillerson said the 22-year-old Warmbier will be reunited with his family in Cincinnati, Ohio, June 13th. Warmbier is a student at the University of Virginia. Tillerson said, at the direction of the president, the Department of State has secured the release of Otto Warmbier from North Korea. The Washington Post newspaper reported that Warmbier was in a coma when he left North Korea. It said he had been in that condition for a year. Warmbier's father, Fred, told the newspaper that he is happy his son is coming home. At the moment, we're just treating this like he's been in an accident. We get to see our son Otto tonight, he told the newspaper. I'm Katie Weaver.
The forests in eastern Zimbabwe supply the country with wood and most of its fresh fruit. But the removal of large numbers of trees and use of fire to clear land have caused a lot of damage to the area. Officials say Zimbabwe lost more than 1.5 million hectares of forest in 2016. This is mostly because of local communities cutting the trees for firewood or setting fires in forested areas to make hunting easier. But now a nonprofit group called Environment Africa is trying to improve the situation. Environment Africa is teaching farmers to raise bees. The group is working in the Mutasa district near the country's border with Mozambique, and it has already helped about 1,500 farmers. Benjamin Chatambura is one such farmer. He has set up about 250 beehives near his home. The insects live on structures called apiaries. Chatambura sells the honey the bees produce and uses the money to feed his family. He likes having bees on his land because the insects help him and the forest. The trees provide us with flowers, he says. That is the food for the bees to produce the honey. If there were a way, I would like more land to plant more different types of trees. We used to have serious problems before we were trained in the importance of the forest. Lawrence Nangwande is with Environment Africa. He says some farmers are earning as much as $1,000 a month from selling honey. The average government worker in Zimbabwe earns just about $500 a month. Nangwande said beekeeping is helping improve the country's forests.
Now, if you look around, the forests in Mutasa are now improving because the communities are also collaborating with the adjacent timber industries to try and fight forest fires. And at the same time, the plantations which are adjacent have also allowed communities to also put their hives in their plantations as a way of trying to curb forest fires.
Support for this project has helped bring attention to protecting the environment and caught the attention of the government. Violet Makoto represents Zimbabwe's Forest Commission, a government agency that works to protect forests. She says the commission hopes local community leaders will take up beekeeping. She said officials also want to end the use of fire to clear land.
That can get us to a stage where we've totally eliminated the issue of failed fires, because this has been responsible for the greater loss of the forest that we've been registering over the years.
Sustainable forest management does not only help the beekeepers. Officials say it protects the health of the timber industry and the businesses it supplies. I'm Jill Robbins.
Summer does not officially begin in the United States and other countries in the Earth's northern hemisphere for more than a week. Yet, you have probably heard the song of the summer of 2017. That is Luis Fonsi's Despacito. Fonsi is from the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico. He wrote Despacito in Spanish, one of the two official languages on the island. The other is English. Despacito is one of the top songs in the world right now. In fact, some music critics think it might be the song of the summer. The website Billboard.com publishes lists of hit songs. One of the lists is called Songs of the Summer. Right now, a version of Despacito with Justin Bieber singing along with Fonsi is at the top of the list. Daddy Yankee, a Spanish-language rap artist, also contributes lyrics to both versions of the song. Bieber learned how to pronounce Spanish words for the song. Despacito means slowly in Spanish. Fonsi says the song is about letting romance take its time. If Despacito is the song of the summer, it will be in good company. It will join songs like Iggy Azalea's Fancy from 2014, Prince's When Doves Cry from 1984, Rick Springfield's Jesse's Girl from 1981, and Jim Croce's Bad, Bad Leroy Brown from 1973. But Fonsi's song may have more in common with another song of the summer, the 1996 hit Macarena by Los Del Rio. That is because Despacito is the first song performed mostly in Spanish to reach number one on Billboard's Hot 100 list since then. The only other mostly Spanish song to reach the number one position was the Los Lobos version of Richie Valens's La Bamba in 1987. The version of Despacito with Bieber is the top song on the Hot 100 list in each of the past 4 weeks. The original version of Despacito was released in January. Its music video on YouTube has been played over 1.9 billion times since then. The version with Bieber has been played almost 300 million times more. Combined, it is one of the most streamed songs ever. Chris Molanfi is a music critic for Slate.com. He wrote recently that Bieber's English verse seems like an unnecessary addition to an already successful song. But he says it was something else, what he called the X factor, that moved the song to the top of the chart. As a result, he wrote, the song shows no signs of slowing down.
You are my sunrise on the darkest day. Got me feeling some kind of way. Make me want to savor every moment slowly, slowly.
I'm Dan Friedel.
Since his students began using Quizlet, English teacher Tristan Thorne has noticed an improvement in their ability to learn and use new words. Quizlet is a learning app, a computer program you use on your mobile device. It can help users build and test their knowledge of English words and terms. Quizlet has word sets for millions of subjects, and it is quickly becoming a useful mobile tool for language learners. Thorne teaches at Columbia University in New York City. Thanks to learning apps, Jeff Strack, another English teacher, has also noted improvement in his students' ability to remember information. Strack teaches at Hostos Community College, also in New York. He and Thorne are part of a growing number of language educators adding mobile apps to their classes. Strack and Thorne seem to agree that the days when teachers would not permit the use of mobile devices are gone.
Because smartphones are so common, and because students want to use them, and also because there are so many great apps and technologies out there that can address certain language learning objectives, I think those are all really good reasons for why instructors should at least attempt to include some apps.
When they use apps, language learners interact with language differently than in a traditional classroom. Users act on or respond to something instead of just listening to new information. Thorne believes that apps can help learners become more actively involved in learning. For example, each week, his students are required to add vocabulary words into Quizlet for others to use. He says some apps also make it easy for students to identify their language strengths and weaknesses. The biggest improvement Strack has seen in his students is their rate of participation. They are much more active in whole class or small group discussions, he notes. Apps involve all students in the activity, he says, whether it's a presentation, game, quiz, or practice activity. Many learning apps are designed for students of all ages and levels. Some are designed for group activities. Others support independent learning. Still others are ideal for homework. Thorne says he especially likes Quizlet and three other apps: QR codes, Socrative, and Evernote.
A QR code is a kind of sign that a smartphone can read with its camera. When the phone recognizes the information, it takes the user to a website, image, video, or anything else you want to share. Thorne says QR codes can help bring real-world materials into the classroom. For example, color printing can be costly, but QR codes enable students to see color images or infographics, he notes.
If we create a QR code of something like an infographic or an image that was used in this morning's NPR article, students can scan the QR code and instantly bring that infographic to their phones and explore and click around.
Evernote lets users store and share notes, images, and recordings in one place. Teachers can also use Evernote to give homework. Thorne often asks his students to record their reactions to something from class. Then, he listens to their recordings and adds his response. He says the best reason to use Evernote is that it helps students to identify their language strengths and weaknesses.
Which, you know, is one of the first things instructors need to do, is to find ways to get students to notice the errors or the particular language challenges they have.
Thorne says Quizlet is a powerful tool because of the many ways it can improve a student's vocabulary. The app uses flashcards, spelling quizzes, and other methods to build and test learners' vocabulary skills. And learners can use Quizlet on their own.
The usual or traditional method of vocabulary studying is to write it down in a notebook and then review it for 5 or 10 minutes a day, just looking at it. But you're not actually actively engaging with the form and the meaning and the use of the vocabulary.
In Socrative, teachers can create timed learning games. Then, in class, students compete individually or as part of a team against classmates. One game Thorne's students love is called Space Race. In this game, if a team answers a question correctly, their rocket moves forward. The team whose rocket gets to the end first wins. Also, teachers can use Socrative as an exit ticket, a question they can ask students about what they learned in that day's class. Students write their answers on their mobile devices. Then, the teacher can show the answers on a shared video screen.
Thorne says that when teachers do use apps, it should always support learning goals.
What it boils down to is, are we using technology for a real purpose? And is it something that we could not use it? Are we using technology just to use technology? Or is there an underlying reason behind it?
Experienced teachers know what works in the classroom and how technology might support the learning goals and class environment, he says. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Phil Dierking.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.